MechCast, Sunday, February 2nd, 2020. Hey, Mech Geeks, it's time for your MechCast, the show for Mech Geeks by Mech Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MechCast. So, do we have any number nerds out there? I bet we do. I bet we have a few. I know, Dan, you might be listening, and I know you are a number nerd. We are a little bit here in my family, and I do have to point out that I'm very excited to be recording the show today because the date is 02/02/2020, which is a palindrome and something that's not going to happen for a very long time ever again. So it's a pretty cool date and a pretty cool time to be recording a MacCast for you. And of course, I'm glad to have you back here with me for another episode. We do have some great things to get into this week. We have some numbers from Apple, their latest quarterly results, and yep, they are looking pretty good. We'll dive into just how good. We'll talk a little bit more about a potential buyout of some content by Apple or a company by Apple for Apple TV Plus, along with some additional Apple TV Plus news. Of course, lots of things going on with Apple's new streaming service. We're going to talk about potential new iPhones, predictions for 2020 iPhones, and a little bit of follow-up on our U.S. Apple Maps rollout. Yeah, I know we've talked about it on a few episodes, but we actually have some news this week related to it. So we'll get into all of that. And of course, we're going to get to some of your feedback. I have some great feedback on my question to you about what you might like to see in a future iMac. We're going to give you a tip on a new feature that you can now use and enable in your on your iPhone 11, if you have an iPhone 11, iPhone 11 Pro. Also, a question about optimized storage and iCloud photo library, and then we'll round things out with a listener thing of the moment. So I got a great tip or a great product from a listener that I want to share with you, and we'll open up a conversation actually about some other options, and I will elicit some feedback from you. So that will round out this episode of the MacCast. Should be a great one. But before we get into everything, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor. That show sponsor is CashFly. You know, I am a huge fan of CashFly. Actually, we are huge fans of CashFly because the reality is without them, you would not be hearing this show. They actually distribute these episodes. They get them out to you quickly and reliably. And they also want to help you do the same thing for your website or your business. They want to give you better performance, better load times, and they have a great way for you to do that. Because when websites don't load, the reality is people lose interest. And each second a page takes to load costs a company about 16% in engagement, and fewer visits means fewer customers, and that's not good for anyone. Not good for the customer experience, not good for your business. But CashFly has your back with their new web optimization capabilities. All of your content can be optimized before it's delivered to your visitors without requiring any development effort from you. And with the recent addition of CashFly's flexible edge application program and implementation service, their capabilities can reach far beyond those of any traditional CDN. CashFly's web content optimization solution gives you powerful APIs for solving your content distribution problems, on-the-fly next-generation image optimization, application load balancing, and smart asset delivery. So if your website is directly tied to your revenue, and you know it is, you can optimize your website's content now. Guarantee the best user experience for all of your customers, no matter where they are or what kind of device they are using, and do it today. And best of all, the good folks at CashFly are even going to provide you a free optimization consultation just for listeners of this podcast. That's right, just for you. You can know exactly where your site stands today with a Lighthouse score report and learn how CashFly's web optimization solution can help add 60 points to your score instantly. Just visit mac.cashfly.com. That's mac.cashefly.com, mac.cashfly.com right now, And a big thank you to Cashfly for their support of this podcast. Just when you thought the days of peak iPhone were long gone, Apple holds its fourth quarter 2019 financial results call and pretty much blows us away. Well, us and especially all of those skeptical analysts out there. It was amazing. Apple announced a whopping revenue result of $91.8 billion for the quarter, along with a net profit of $22.2 billion. That happened to be the best quarter in Apple's history. They are stronger than ever. So every time somebody says Apple's out, they're gone, they're done, I don't know. Don't believe them, because Apple just keeps proving over and over again that they can reinvent themselves, they can figure out new revenue models, and even bring old revenue models back. Because it turns out the iPhone did incredibly well this quarter. Breaking down the net sales by category, iPhone raked in $56 billion in revenue. That's about 61% of all the revenue brought in the quarter. And actually the second highest iPhone revenue in Apple history. So it had been on a slide for a while. It's been a couple years since we've seen numbers this good for iPhone, but it is back with the iPhone 11, iPhone 11 Pro. And the iPhone 11 was the big secret here. We'll talk about that here in just a second. But getting to some of the other figures, services, that brought in $12.7 billion in revenue, actually the second highest revenue generator for Apple. 14% of the total revenue, up 17%, and it set a new record for Apple services revenue. A few other highlights. Apple pointed out that Apple News now has over 100 million monthly users. I found that interesting, using the term users and not subscribers, so I suspect that means just the number of people who are using Apple News. I think the subscriber numbers might be a bit lower, but they did highlight that in their services. Also, Apple Pay revenue and transactions doubled year over year, so those are picking up big time too. A lot of time when we talk about Apple services, we talk about things like iCloud or Apple Care. Those things generating a lot of revenue. Also now Apple Music, of course, and then now Apple's new TV streaming service, although Apple TV Plus is probably still on a lot of free subscriptions, so it's probably not adding a lot to that revenue. I have a feeling a big chunk of it is iCloud and Apple Music, but Apple did want to point out Apple Pay revenue on the rise and doubling transactions and revenue year over year. That is good overall. The other big category was wearables, home, and accessories, probably mostly highlighted by wearables in the form of Apple Watch and EarPods. $10 billion in revenue, representing 11% of Apple's total revenue. It's the first time it passed Mac revenues ever, so wearables, home, and accessory now accounts for more of Apple's revenue than the Mac itself. Apple Watch, Apple says, set new revenue records, and 75% of Apple Watch purchases, they say, were from people who were new to the product. So a lot of people jumping in on Apple Watch. Of course, Apple doesn't break out individual numbers within the category, so we don't know how much of this is Apple Watch, how much is EarPods, how much is HomePod and other accessories, but overall, $10 billion in revenue, that's not too shabby. And as far as AirPods go, Apple did comment that they are still struggling to meet demand for AirPods Pro. So I would assume this number could have been even higher if Apple could have kept up with demand. So we don't know if they have just a supply chain problem there, or it's just demand being super, super high. I have a feeling it's probably the latter. Rounding out the numbers, Mac brought in $77.2 billion in revenue, representing 8% of the total revenue, and iPad came in at $6 billion for 7% of total revenue. And that rounds out all of the various products and categories. So overall, amazing quarter for Apple. And again, the turnaround in iPhone revenue seems to be led by the success of the iPhone 11. As a matter of fact, Tim Cook pointed out that the iPhone 11 was the top-selling iPhone model every week in the December quarter. So that proving very popular, which is another reason why I think we're hearing strong rumors that Apple is looking to bring out a successor to the lower-cost iPhone, the iPhone SE. And we'll talk more about that in just a moment. But wanted to kick things off on a really good positive note for Apple. And of course, these quarterly numbers could not have been better. Moving on to some Apple TV Plus news, and I was having a little bit of deja vu when I read this story, but CNBC cited sources familiar with the matter claiming that Apple had been in discussions or was at least considering a possible acquisition of MGM as a way to build out their content for their Apple TV Plus streaming service. And the reason I was having deja vu is because this was the second time we have discussed a deal between Apple and MGM. You might remember from about a month ago or so, a report from the Wall Street Journal in December that mentioned a possible content deal with Apple and MGM, not necessarily a full buyout. Right now, what we're hearing is there seemed to have been at least preliminary talks between Apple and MGM to gauge interest in a possible buyout of the company. It's unclear if any additional discussions are going on or if progress is going further at all, but something apparently did happen. This is not the only time that we've heard that Apple possibly has an interest in purchasing traditional media companies or production studios. You may remember that there were reports a while back that Apple lost out in a bid to Warner Media for purchasing J.J. Abrams' studio, Bad Robot, and that Apple was also reportedly exploring an acquisition of the film studio A24. So far, none of that has happened. Apple has been just either buying content or buying shows or producing some of their own shows. Buying up MGM's catalog, which was reported or is reportedly worth more than $10 billion, could be a good acquisition for Apple if they wanted to get a bunch of back catalog stuff, or if they wanted to get access to some pretty rich content and properties, things like James Bond, which would be very interesting if Apple could put together like James Bond TV series. That could be pretty neat. But still, I'm not sure at this point Apple is really looking to build out a large back catalog of shows. We keep hearing these reports, but we don't see them pulling the trigger on anything, and I think that's likely deliberate. I think they're starting to realize that that's probably something they don't need. More and more traditional studios and media companies are starting to silo their own content behind their own streaming efforts. And it seems like a lot of the pioneering streaming services, the direct streaming services like Apple, Netflix, and Amazon, they are getting more and more interested in producing their own content or purchasing new and original content that's exclusive to their networks. And I imagine that's what Apple is planning on continuing to do, rather than trying to fill out a back catalog, just producing their own content. Another thing I can think of is a better place to spend the money would be in acquiring or gaining licensing rights to characters and franchises. And of course, one way to do that would be to buy existing production companies that already have those rights. But I think just going after that stuff directly could help them produce the next generation of new shows exclusive to their platform. Overall, my opinion is Apple tends to look forward, not backward, and I'm not sure the future of streaming media really is in back catalog stuff. I do think it's important maybe for drawing in new customers up front, but I think more and more most people are interested in new shows. I don't think a lot of people stick around for a large back catalog. I guess having access to a lot of content is always great, but I think you can build that up and do it moving forward. And if Netflix is any example, I think they've kind of proven that, right? They're losing a lot of their content, like I said, as traditional networks and studios and things start to silo their own content behind their own paywalls. And Amazon's saying, all right, go for it. We're going to just keep producing a million of our own shows and we'll keep our customers that way. And it seems to be working for them. And I think that's the plan Apple will take as well. I think it's also worth pointing out that Apple isn't, I don't think, at this point looking to be really huge, really fast. I think they're going to do their typical thing, which is a slow buildup of content over time. They will prove themselves in the long run, much in the same way as they did with Apple Music. If you remember when they first launched their catalog, it wasn't definitely not the biggest catalog out there, but they kept working on it. They kept improving it, slowly growing it until they were a significant player in the market. And I think that's something that Apple tends to be really good at. And I think that's what they will focus on with Apple TV Plus. And as far as them struggling with Apple TV Plus and their content, we hear that a lot, but there's not a lot of evidence to show that that's exactly what's happening. As a matter of fact, this week we got some evidence to the contrary from a company called Parrot Analytics. This was reported by Business Insider, and they claim that 6 of the top 10 streamed shows in the fourth quarter of 2019 came from Apple TV Plus. Yeah, 6 of the top 10. And remember, Apple didn't have that many shows when they launched the service. But in the top 10, according to Parrot Analytics, Truth Be Told, Servant, C, For All Mankind, Dickinson, and The Morning Show, they were all in the list. They were not at the top. The top 3 were The Witcher from Netflix, The Mandalorian at number 2 from Disney, and Harley Quinn on DC Universe. Is that what that channel's called? The DC streaming service. That came in at number 3. But Apple was right after that with all of these shows, with one or two, I think, additional Netflix shows mixed in. So Apple had more shows in that top 10 list than Netflix or Disney or Amazon even combined. So I thought that was pretty impressive and shows that that focus on quality might just be paying off. And they continue to grow the talent that they're putting behind Apple TV+. Apple has reportedly picked up former network engineer, or Netflix network engineer, Ruslan Meschenberg, who was part of the team that built out the technology for Netflix's streaming service. He's now going to be part of Apple TV Plus's network team. This is according to a report in the Wall Street Journal. He was involved in projects at Netflix to create faster and more consistent service, and the assumption is that's what he'll be doing for Apple as well. His LinkedIn profile was recently changed, and he now lists himself as an engineering lead for Apple. Apple also inked another exclusive deal with a former HBO executive. This is according to Deadline. Apple made a deal with Carmi Zlotnick, a former Starz and HBO programming executive. And while at Starz and HBO, Zlotnick oversaw the production of hits like Band of Brothers, Sopranos, American Gods, and Outlander. So again, Apple picking up some very talented, very well-connected people from the business to build out their service, and I only expect it to get better and better. And we've still got some great shows coming, including the new show that's based on Isaac Asimov's Foundation novels. This week, we heard a report that claims that Apple's upcoming adaptation of those novels for Apple TV Plus will be produced in Ireland, and it will end up being one of Ireland's largest single productions ever made. Screen Ireland claims that the production will be filmed at Troy Studios in Limerick in Southern Ireland and employ over 500 people. The Foundation series is expected to be a 10-episode series developed by Skydance Television, and it is being written by Josh Friedman and David S. Goyer, and is going to star Jared Harris, who was in Chernobyl, and Lee Pace from Halt and Catch Fire. And so I know there's a lot of Asimov fans out there. I'm not super familiar with the Foundation series, but anything sci-fi is something I am very interested in. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Apple does with this. And they're going to be producing it, it sounds like, over 2020. So I don't know if it's going to release this year or maybe sometime in 2021, but just another one of the great series that is on the way from Apple TV Plus. And that kind of rounds out the Apple TV Plus news for this week. The iPhone 9, that lower-cost iPhone, might see production delays. A number of analysts feel that the recent outbreak of the coronavirus in China will likely have an impact on the supply chain for technology in the region. And because Apple is very dependent upon that supply chain in China, it seems reasonable to assume that this would have an impact on Apple as well. Bloomberg's Mark Gurman thinks that at the very least, this could put Apple's chances of launching the new low-cost iPhone in the first half of the year at risk. The Nikkei Asian Review said that Apple was set up for orders of up to 19 million iPhone 9 devices to start production in the third week of February. And so with this outbreak, it's likely that that production schedule could be impacted. But Gurman also does point out that Apple often lines up multiple sources for components to help minimize the impact of any disruption from a single source or a single supplier. So very much they plan for this sort of thing to happen. Still, if the second supplier can't ramp up quickly or pick up the slack, it's logical to think that production delays could occur. So we're hoping to see that iPhone 9 sometime in the first quarter here, but don't be surprised if it gets pushed back or delayed a little bit. I know a lot of people are looking forward to it. We've talked about it quite a bit, and we're about to get into a little more of the details here in just a second. That's because Ming-Chi Kuo is out with a number of his predictions for 2020 Apple products. He lines up a number of different devices, starting with what he calls the iPhone SE 2, what I've been calling the iPhone 9 or the iPhone 8 SE. Basically the iPhone product we've been discussing a lot about. It's expected to be a 4.7-inch LCD with Touch ID using the same design and form factor as the iPhone 8. Internally, it's expected to have a updated and up-to-date A13 chip from Apple along with 3 gigabytes of RAM with a starting price at around $399 US. And if Apple can get that out the door, I think it is going to be a huge seller. It might even eclipse the iPhone 11 sales that did so well last quarter. Ming-Chi Kuo also thinks that Apple is set in the first quarter of this year to put out, or the first half of this year rather, to put out a new updated iPad Pro. There we're expecting it to remain largely the same, of course, updated processors and internals, and it is rumored to be getting the new triple lens camera system, along with potentially that 3D sensing time of flight support for augmented reality applications. Kuo is also expecting Apple to ship some new MacBook updates in the first half of the year. Here, it's expected to be kind of an update like we saw with the 16-inch MacBook Pro, gaining a new keyboard with scissor switch designs and, I would imagine, updated Intel processors. More interestingly, Ming-Chi Kuo mentioned a couple of products we had, or at least one product we hadn't heard of before, a smaller wireless charging mat. He did not give a lot of details on this or say specifically what he means by it, but I would imagine it is just a single coil wireless charger from Apple. I don't know how it would be improved versus other wireless chargers that are on the market. Maybe it could have an attachment or the ability to also charge an Apple Watch, but this is expected to be, I would imagine, a slimmed down version of their Air Power mat that they never ended up shipping. So I don't know. How do you feel about a wireless charger from Apple? I feel like we've got a bunch of great wireless Qi chargers already. I'm not sure how Apple could set theirs apart other than slapping an Apple logo on it and hoping that Apple fans will actually scoop it up. The other two products we've been hearing about are ones that we have heard about in the past. One of them is the ultra wideband tags, or what's being called air tags. We expected to actually have those last year, but they never surfaced. There was a lot of rumors around them. We talked about them a lot here on the MacCast, but basically these are like the Tile product where you can put a tracking tag on your keys or your remote, other devices, and then be able to track it with an app on your iPhone. The big deal with Apple's version is that they would take advantage of the new ultra-wideband chip that is in the latest iPhones. The advantages of ultra-wideband is it makes the tags easier to locate because they have technologies like angle detection and also better accuracy than Bluetooth. And we've already seen hints of software support in some of the betas for iOS. So I have a feeling this is something that Apple had planned for last year. Due to probably technical reasons, they didn't have it quite ready to go. And it coming out in the first half of this year seems logical to me. Finally, the last product we had been hearing about was a new high-end Bluetooth headphone, something that is thought to be Apple-branded versus within their Beats brand, because Apple does already have some great headphones marketed under the Beats brand, but this would supposedly be an Apple-branded headphone. It's not clear how these would be different than the Beats, but it is expected that they would include some of the new technology found in AirPods, and I would imagine things like the new noise-canceling features that are in the AirPods, those making their way to a set of Apple headphones. All of these products, Ming-Chi Kuo does warn, could be impacted by the coronavirus in China. So release dates could fluctuate, but they are expected right now sometime in the first half of this year. And then finally in the news for this week, it is official. We've talked about it a couple times here on the MacCast. I sort of pre-announced it as being official based on information that came out in Apple blogs, but turned out to be wrong and made a correction. And what I'm talking about is the U.S. rollout of the Apple Enhanced Maps. Apple has now made an official statement that all users in the United States now have access to the redesigned maps. Next, they say they will be targeting Europe to try and get the updates rolled out over there. They didn't say which regions at first are being specifically targeted. They just said Europe in general. As far as the U.S. goes, the update brings better road coverage, more accurate pedestrian data, more precise addresses, more detailed views of roads, parks, buildings, airports, and a whole bunch more. Apple also mentioned new features like Look Around, which is right now offered only in limited cities. That's Apple's Street View-like technology, and it really is amazing. Honolulu, Los Angeles, I'm trying to remember some of the other cities, New York, I think. You can check that out there. I'm hoping, really, really hoping they roll that out very quickly in other cities because it is amazing. And they also talked about the new collections, which allows you to make lists of your favorite places within the Maps app. And I played around with this a little bit. Living in San Diego, we have a lot of craft breweries. I am a craft beer fan, and I made my own collection of craft breweries here in the area where I live. And it's pretty simple to do. Just tap a little button to add it to a list. You can make multiple collections, and you can even share them with people via a private link. So that's a pretty neat feature if you haven't checked that out. The new maps also let you share ETA, flight status information, and have indoor maps for malls and airports. And Apple says they also now offer Siri natural language guidance for directions, making those easier to follow. And you can also get real-time transit information in cities like San Francisco, New York, and Los Angeles. So a bunch of new features. It is officially rolled out now. We can say that. I kind of felt like on the last MacCast a week ago, it felt like it was already rolled out, but a couple people wrote in to tell me, hey, I saw it for a second and then it went away. So I think it's going to be more reliable now. I even mentioned that I was seeing it on my iPhone, but wasn't seeing it on my Mac. I think now that Apple has made the official announcement, we can say the Apple Maps rollout is done. That does mean, however, that they didn't meet their own internal goal that they had set, I think, back at WWDC in June of last year, that they were going to have the rollout completed by the end of 2019. So it took them a couple months longer, but no big deal. It is out now. And again, hopefully they'll be rolling that out across Europe very, very soon. But with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a moment and thank another show sponsor, and that sponsor is Linode. Hey, look, if you need to set up a website, you need a place to do some server hosting, check out Linode. They are a great service, and their Linode Cloud makes it very easy to instantly deploy and manage an SSD server. You can get a server up and running literally in seconds and do it with your choice of Linux distribution, resources, and even your choice of 10 different node locations. They just opened their newest data center in Mumbai, India, and it's built using their most up-to-date hardware and next-generation backbone. Linode also allows you to comply with in-country data protection requirements while taking advantage of all of Linode's technologies and tools. And best of all, because you are a MacCast listener, when you go to set up your new Linode server, they are going to give you a $20 credit. And with Linode, you have all the options and choices to build a server with the services and features you need. Whatever you want, you can build it on Linode. Dedicated CPUs, distributed applications, hosted services, websites, continuous integration, and continuous delivery environments. It is all possible. And all of their servers feature native SSD storage, a 40 gigabit network, and industry-leading processors. Plus, you can pick from any of their 10 worldwide data centers, and pricing is simple with no surprise fees. You pay for just what you use with hourly billing across all of their plans and add-on services. And their new cloud manager features an improved user interface, which makes managing your Linodes and upgrading your plan even easier. And I was checking it out. It is beautiful. It's one of the best control panels I've ever seen, hands down. And hey, one other thing, Linode is hiring. So if you have the skills and you're looking for a job, check out linode.com/careers for all of their current career opportunities. And after you do that, head over to linode.com/maccast to get your first Linode set up in their Linode cloud and get a $20 credit. That's linode.com/maccast, linode.com/maccast. And a big thank you to Linode for their support of the show. I need to start off the feedback portion of the show this week correcting something that is a little bit embarrassing for me, because I should know better and I should look these things up. Although, in my defense, I will say that I am not a wireless engineer. I don't pretend to or even want to work in the wireless technology space. As cool as I think it is using it, it's not my jam. But we were talking last week about some of the 5G technologies that might be coming to future iPhones, and I referred to one of the 5G technologies as MM Wave technology. And a number of you wrote in, including my friend Bart Bouchatz, who pinged me on Twitter and wrote to tell me, "Hey, Adam, that is actually MM as in millimeter, as in wavelength. And therefore, that means it's not MM wave technology. It is millimeter wave technology, or millimeter wave 5G. So sorry about that if it caused any confusion, and I will refer to it correctly in the future. And I do thank everybody for writing in to correct my little error there. Another thing we were talking about last week on the MacCast was an Apple patent for what looked like to be a new iMac design. It was an all-glass design with kind of this embedded display. It was this curved glass that would swoop down. It kind of had this wedge foot at the bottom for all of the connections and power cables and the computer itself, and it looked beautiful in the drawings, and it would be a really neat redesign of the iMac. And we started talking about the fact that the iMac, as classic as its design is, it's probably a little bit overdue for a complete redesign. But I personally didn't have any thoughts on what the redesign should look like. So I kind of threw it out to you in the community and said, hey, what would you like to see in a new iMac design? And Doug wrote back and he said, you know, what I think I'd like to see? I think it would be nice to have an iMac that would have a touch screen with the ability to swivel down to various angles, even to horizontal. And this is an idea and concept that has come up before. As a matter of fact, you may remember that Microsoft did a similar all-in-one computer design that did exactly this. It would sort of work as a desktop, as an all-in-one with a display, but then you could grab it and sort of tilt it down almost like a drafting table, and then it came with a stylus and you could work on it. And it intrigued a number of artists and illustrators and folks like that. And so I agree a lot with Doug. I think that would be a very cool way to give kind of a refresh and an update to the iMac. He also mentions that maybe Mac OS itself could become more touch friendly or even have the ability to do iOS emulation. And there, Doug, I am not so sure I'm with you on that one as much. I'm not as on board to see sort of Mac OS get touch capabilities. I'm not really super excited about the concept of a touchscreen MacBook or MacBook Pro or a touchscreen iMac per se. I will say, as far as iOS emulation goes, we kind of have that with Mac Catalyst in Mac OS Catalina. This is the technology that makes it pretty easy for developers to take their iOS apps and bring them to the Mac. As a matter of fact, that's how Apple's podcast app works on the Mac, along with the Home app. And let's see what else. I think the Stocks app, a number of the apps that came in Catalina are just ports of the iOS versions of the app using the Mac Catalyst technology. So not really emulation. You actually have to sort of reprogram it so that it works with mouse and keyboard or a trackpad and keyboard. But the tools and technology in Mac Catalyst make it much simpler for developers to do that. So I'm okay with Apple going that way. So you might be asking, well, Adam, if you're on board with the whole iMac sort of swiveling down, how would that work? And I see it working not so much as a touch screen like an iPad, but more Apple bringing Apple Pencil support to that kind of convertible Mac. And I think there's some really interesting applications there. And I really see them doing it on a desktop. I'm not really sure how that would work on a portable, unless they had developed some sort of screen like on a MacBook Pro where you could actually flip it around 180 degrees and then sort of close it back on itself, turning it back into a tablet. But then you would lose access to, say, the keyboard. So I'm kind of thinking more of an iMac that also doubles almost like a Wacom tablet, right? And sort of slides down into that artist mode. And I think that would be a very interesting design. I'm sure it's something that Apple has thought about. Whether they'll actually ever bring it to market, who knows? But I think, again, with the technology that we have in the Apple Pencil and how amazing that is, that could be an amazing, you know, application on a large screen display, like a 27-inch display. And I think a lot of artists and professionals would really welcome that kind of interface. But, you know, what do you think? What are your thoughts on future designs for iMacs? How would you change the iMac to make it refreshed in terms of its design, in terms of its functionality? I think Doug's idea is absolutely fabulous, and I look forward to hearing your thoughts and ideas on it as well. Shoot your emails, excuse me, and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You might remember that a couple months ago, there was a small controversy surrounding the iPhone 11 and iPhone 11 Pro as far as background location tracking was concerned. Users were noticing that even when location services were turned off on their devices, they were still seeing location data and location pings happening. And what turned out to be going on was there was an issue related to, or not really an issue, it was actually a feature related to the new ultra-wideband U1 chips that were in those devices. And what was going on is that in some countries, the use of ultra-wideband technology is prohibited. And what Apple had cleverly done, or at least thought they had cleverly done, was set it up so that it would use the location on your device. It never actually left the device, but it would use location data and location information to detect when you were in one of these prohibited countries, and then it would automatically disable the ultra-wideband chip in your device, and that way the device would be compatible and not in violation of the laws in that region. And that's what was going on. After it was discovered and people realized this is what was happening, Apple promised to update the operating system to allow users to manually disable the tracking completely so that they could turn off location services 100% on the device. And that happened with the release of iOS 13.3.1, which I think came out last week or the week before. Recently, Apple updated iOS to 13.3.1, and now you can do exactly that. Although how you do it is not exactly clear, so I thought I'd cover it here on the show. So if you'd like to disable the ultra wideband technology in your iPhone 11 or your iPhone 11 Pro, what you do is you open up Settings, you scroll down to the Privacy section, go into that, tap on Location Services, and then choose System Services from that list. And then within the list that comes up, look for Networking and Wireless, the Networking and Wireless option, and toggle the little switch button there to disable it. You will be asked to confirm that you want to disable the network and wireless location data, and then once you have, then the ultra-wideband chip will be disabled and all of your location services will be completely disabled if you have location services turned off and you won't see any of that data being read or recognized anymore. It is worth noting that disabling this feature also means that your iPhone will not be able to use location services to do enhanced Wi-Fi or Bluetooth connections, so just be aware of that. If you want to undo this, you basically reverse those options, you know, re-enable the network and wireless location data, and the ultra-wideband chip will be re-enabled. So it's not just a switch that says, you know, toggle ultra-wideband or U1 chip. You actually kind of have to go deep into the settings to find this. But there it is if you want to do it, and Apple, you know, following through on that promise. I have been using iCloud Photo Library for a while now, a few years now, and I actually really, really like it. And I know we've covered it here on the MacCast a few times, but this week I did receive a great question from Robert, who wrote in and asked, how does this feature work? How does optimized storage work? Specifically, he says that he currently has his iPhone set up using the Keep Originals options. And he has a 256 gigabyte iPhone. It's not completely full yet, but he did say that he noticed as he was doing upgrades from iPhone to iPhone, it takes a long time to kind of transfer all that data. And he worries that over time, he's actually going to start to fill up his phone with all of the high resolution images. And that at some point, he's going to want to switch to the optimize option. And so he wanted to know, how does it replace the photos with smaller version? And when, more specifically, when does it do that? Or how does it do that? And is there any way to kind of control how that works? For example, he said it would be nice to have a setting in Photos to keep the originals, say, for 1 month before they become the optimized lower res versions. And unfortunately, Robert, there is not a way to really control specifically how it does it. It's like a lot of things with Apple. Apple sort of picks the way it works, and that's just how it works. And they're going to decide what works best for you and me, and you don't get a lot of control or features. But first off, I think we should probably talk a little bit about the feature itself and how it's enabled. So this is a feature of iCloud Photo Library. In case you don't know what iCloud Photo Library is, it is the ability in the Photos app to allow Apple to upload to upload all of your photos into the cloud. And the advantage of that is that you'll have them stored in the iCloud Photo Library. And then those photos can be synced down to all of your Macs and other devices that are part of your iCloud. And what's great about it is that it does have this option on each device and each Mac where you can choose whether that device has all of the full size, full resolution images, or whether you want it to store just optimized or lower resolution versions of those images. And then when you need the higher resolution, say if we're doing an edit or sharing with someone, it will automatically download from the cloud that full resolution version. And so that allows you to save a lot of storage on devices that might not have that much storage. Say you have a MacBook Air with a small hard drive, or you have an iPad or an iPhone that maybe doesn't have a ton of storage. You can still carry all of the thumbnails and the photos and all of the images there. You can even do edits on them with the low res versions, and then those edits will actually be synced across to your higher res versions. It is a really cool feature and it works really, really well. Of course, the one caveat is you need to have enough iCloud storage to store a large photo library if that's what you have. But as prices of iCloud storage come down, it's really becoming a big option for a lot of people, even if you have a large iCloud photo library. So how to enable this? If you go on your device and go into settings and then click on your name at the top or your account at the top and then click on iCloud, or tap on iCloud rather, I guess I should say, you can then tap on photos and then you will see the various options. And there's really two options. One is keep originals, which means all of the full size, full resolution images will be stored on that device. Or you can choose optimize storage for that device. And if you do that, then what happens is space-saving photos and videos are kept on your device while all of the original full-resolution versions are uploaded and stored in iCloud. And you can still download and access the full-size versions on your device, and those versions will actually stay on your device until you need space. And this sort of gets to the crux of what Robert was asking about. How does that work, right? I've got these optimized versions, these lower-sized versions on my device. If I do download or have a full-size version, how long does it stay there, and when and how does it get replaced? And so what happens is when optimizing space, iOS starts removing the high resolution versions of your photos and videos with the ones that you access the least. So say you've got a bunch of high res videos and photos already downloaded on there. Maybe you download a bunch of new apps, maybe a large new game, and you're getting short on storage. What will happen is the operating system will go through your iCloud photos, your photos, looking for any high resolution versions that you haven't accessed or looked at in a really long time. And the ones with the least amount of access will be the first ones that are deleted, they will be replaced with the low res optimized versions, and the high res versions, full resolution versions, will be stored in iCloud. You can always get those back. It's not a problem. But the other question Robert had about this was, well, what about when I use other apps, say like Google Photos or OneDrive, and I use those to upload my originals to those services, my high-res originals to those services, also as a form of backup? And Robert, there, I'm not 100% sure what happens with optimized storage. I would imagine that they would upload whatever version was currently on your device. So if you had the high-res version, that would be what would get uploaded. If it was the optimized version, it would be that version until maybe you downloaded the full-res version, and then those apps would recognize, hey, there's a change, something's different, and it would sync up that high-res original. I also do know that some of these third-party apps work through the camera roll, and can also sync new images that you take with the camera app on your device. And anytime you're taking those images, when you first take them, of course, they are going to be the full resolution, high res versions. And so I would imagine those would get uploaded, and those would also be what was stored in the Photos application until you started running out of space. And then using the rules that we just talked about, it would go through and start to replace those full res versions with the optimized versions. So I imagine that's how that would work. I don't think the feature would impact those applications too much, but it does bring up my sort of final point when it comes to using optimized storage with iCloud Photo Library. And that is that more generally, I would recommend that for doing online backups, syncing with other online services like Google Photos and OneDrive, and just in general, I would recommend that you set up a Mac on your home network to be the one, as we call it, source of truth, or the one place that has all of your original library. And that would be the device that you set up Keep Originals on, and then every other device that you could use optimized photos or optimized storage. And the idea here is that you have a desktop Mac or a more permanent Mac that, one, has access to more storage and more storage that's easily expandable, so you don't have to worry if you're getting a larger and larger photo library, right? You can move it to a larger external drive. You could replace the internal drive in your Mac with a larger version. You have a way to expand that storage. And then that Mac becomes the place where all of your originals are stored, and then you can use backups on that Mac, whether it be Time Machine backups or clone backups or offsite backups like Backblaze, as a place to get another copy of those full-size originals. Because I think it's also important to point out that while iCloud Photo Library will store all of your original images, I personally, and I don't think you, would want Apple to have the only copy of your full-size originals. And if you're using the optimized storage option, that could be the scenario, right? Apple iCloud has all of the full-size originals, but you don't have a way to create an offsite backup from that, a clone backup from that, anything like that. So you'd want to set up a single Mac, set up with Keep Originals option turned on. All of your originals would be stored in the photo library for that Mac, and then you could back up that photo library to multiple locations. And I really recommend backing up to at least two locations, or even better, three, and making sure that one of those locations is a offsite backup location. And we've talked about many ways you can do that. If you want to find out more information about that, go back and listen to previous episodes of the MacCast. But lots of options there. And I think the other reason for setting it up on a Mac, on a home network, is you have a more reliable, more constant home network. And then you could set up services like Google Photos or OneDrive or any other of these cloud services to also sync the photos from that library on your Mac. And I think it's going to be much more reliable and a much better way to go. But that's just my opinion. If anybody else has other tips and tricks related to iCloud Photo Library and storage and how optimized storage and all this stuff works, shoot us some feedback. Send me an email, maccast@gmail.com. And the last thing I have for you this week is a thing of the moment, and this one comes from a listener. I love it when this happens. Usually I'm trying to come up with things of the moment, but hey, if you have something cool that you're using and you really love and you want to share it with the MacCast community, send it along to us. And that's what happened this week. This one comes from listener Brian, and he says, quote, "I like keeping my device cables and chargers neatly wrapped and stored while not in use. I recently bought a Wrap-It storage zipper case from Staples for my iPad charger. I also have a need for larger cases, so I checked out Wrap-It's website, and lo and behold, I was a kid in a candy store." And I'll have a link to Wrap-It storage in the show notes at maccast.com, but this is actually some really cool stuff. They have some really nice cases. They have Velcro cables and ties. They have little labels and tags for sorting and organizing your cables, all kinds of things, and not just for your computers and accessories. They have them for home appliances. They have them for garage cables and extension cords and all sorts of stuff. And it is a really cool website. So thanks for sharing that with us, Brian. And I have to say, a little story for myself, one of the best Christmas gifts I ever got, and I still use, was a zippered cable case. In my situation, it was this thing that folds open sort of flat and has all kinds of little mesh pockets that I can slide cables and accessories. I have SD cards and I have all my dongles in there. I have USB sticks and just about anything that I need to carry along with my Mac, and they're all neatly organized and stored in there. And this little zipper case was a gift from my wife for Christmas, and I think it was like a $10 Target find. So there's a lot of these cool little things out there. Wrap-It is one example of that. I know another popular one for cable storage is the Grid-Its. If you've never seen these, this is from Cocoon Innovations, and it's kind of a flat board with a weaved grid of elastic straps, and you can pull up different sections of those and hold down cables and accessories inside of them, and then take that whole flat thing and slide it into a pocket in, say, like your computer bag, and it will store and organize all of your cables. And I know a lot of people really, really like those as well. For home cables, another trick I can give you that I've seen people do, I haven't done this myself, but I've thought about doing it because all of us, I think, we all have that giant box of cables, right? Or that giant drawer just full of a mess of spaghetti cables. A great way to organize those is to use old toilet paper tubes. And so what you do is you basically fold up your cable, you slide that right into the toilet paper tube, and you could put a few cables in there. You can organize them by kind. So you can put all of your USB cables together, maybe all of your Thunderbolt cables together. You can label the sides of the tubes, and then you can store them upright inside another container or another drawer, and you have them all nice and neatly organized, and they won't get all tangled up when you have them in storage. And it also makes it much easier to find the cable that you need when you need it. So that's another great little trick. And I'm sure there's a bunch of other cable organization products, storage products, tips and tricks out there. So if you have one of those, please send it in. It'd be great if you could send in an audio comment. Just try to keep it short, maybe 2 or 3 minutes, and let us know what you're using and what your tip and trick is. And with that, I think we better get to wrapping up the show, because I'm starting to apparently stumble over my own words. All right. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank my show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, along with PDF Pen for iOS. You can get more information and details on all of their great applications by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cacheFly.com, and all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IAM-9. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And finally, if you want to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. You can check out the MacCast Facebook page over on facebook.com/TheMacCast, or check out the Instagram at MacCast on Instagram. And that is going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.